Ella Maillard of Switzerland, Part 3, Conclusion. With this final installment, we conclude our short description of the life, aspirations, and realizations of a woman who, in the early 20th century, gained worldwide fame from her fearless adventures in the remotest parts of the globe. Ella Maillard's incessant desire to discover uncharted territory ultimately landed her at the feet of the Maharishi, where she realized that the true journey and destination is the discovery of the ever-present self within. After Maillard's return to Switzerland, she was requested to send an article for Bhagavan's 1946 Golden Jubilee Souvenir, which she titled The Sage's Activity in Inactivity. Ella's article is printed on pages 237 to 242 on the 1995 edition of Golden Jubilee Souvenir. In the article, she advances many insights about Bhagavan's exalted state and his ultimate beneficence to the whole creation, which can so easily be misunderstood by the Western savants. She begins her contribution with the following remarks. According to my actual understanding, it would be foolishly daring of me to write something about Sri Ramana himself, the mode of life of a sage being an abysmal mystery. But for those who enjoy a similar state of consciousness, how and to whom can be described what is experienced within by one who is desireless, whose sorrow is destroyed, and who is contented with purpose, and who is contented with repose in the self? Ashtavakra Gita. Neither can I be so bold as to add my gloss to the commentaries that have already been made on the Maharishi's 40 verses. Who am I to do it? Would it be of any help to anyone? And is it not much better to let Sri Ramana, the teacher, comment on them himself, if and when he thinks it could be of any use? As for descriptions of the life at the ashram in Thiruvannamalai, I don't think it is within my power to depict the subtle atmosphere which renders the place unique in its setting of dry and hard beauty. Nevertheless, I would like a small token of homage to reach the feet of Sri Ramana from me as a pledge of my gratefulness, and he will perhaps be indulgent enough to accept the following lines about a thought that occurred to me. After her return to Switzerland, she added an additional last chapter to her French edition of Cruises and Caravans. In it, she openly reveals her lifelong spiritual aspirations and how the few years she spent in India resolved all her doubts and led her to the path of self-inquiry of who am I? Excerpts from this chapter follow. Chapter 14, South India, translated by Mary Tonnerre of Thiruvannamalai. Since book learning never really suited me, my idea was to take some time living with a sage whose behavior would oblige me to grasp what eluded me intellectually. I learned about two seemingly genuine spiritual masters from two French friends who were familiar with India. The world attracts us by its marvels and by its adorable beauty, even before we start to feel that, indeed, it has a hidden meaning. We start to study it, we go off to conquer it, looking for whatever satisfaction it could bring to our deepest desires. But none of the multiple aspects of the world can give us the fundamental answer. That can only come from God. And where else is God other than within us? Everyone has to discover this fundamental truth on his own. The spiritual being hidden within us is the living source of our deepest aspirations. And those aspirations will never be fulfilled unless the deeper being is liberated. In many of us, it is impotent, paralyzed because it has been neglected, and the power to bring it back to life lies within the heart and not in the brain. I am not saying all this because someone taught it to me, but because I have experienced the truth. In my view, it is the most important truth that has emerged from everything that I have seen or understood. It is the sum of all my discoveries. Today, I feel fulfilled. And even though I live alone, never again will I suffer from loneliness. India, for me, was the beginning of a completely new voyage that would lead me to the full and harmonious life that I was instinctively looking for. To undertake this journey, first I had to understand the unknown lands of my own spirit. I was lucky enough to make a few hundred rupees from the screening of my film on Afghanistan in Bombay. I had taken leave for 18 months, so I could try to live like a Hindu in the south of this great country. That would give me enough time to decide whether Hindu wisdom actually suited me. I made several brief trips to Pondicherry, where I went to visit Sri Aurobindo twice, but for a few minutes only, and among several hundred disciples. The rest of the time, the master would retire to his room on the first floor of a large grey house surrounded by a flowery courtyard. This was not what I was looking for, and his method seemed too difficult for me. On the other hand, I wanted to prolong my stay near the sage Ramana Maharishi. His life was public. Anyone could approach him, asking questions and enjoy the benefits of his presence that radiated goodness, distinction, and immutable peace. And there, each one of us was free to do whatever he wanted because, with the exception of meals, there was no set of rules for community life. I got into the routine of staying for 2 hours each morning and each evening in the hall, where around 20 people of both sexes were seated on the ground, legs crossed in silent meditation. I read the little brochures where the main responses of the sage had been collected over the course of some 30 years. His function was to inform seekers about the nature of the ultimate reality. And I tried to see if his replies corresponded with something I felt in myself. While reading his mail or the newspapers, correcting proofs, finding himself or meditating, the Maharishi would sometimes look at us or would smile at the astonished children who stood there like pillars in front of him. He would often give nuts to the agile squirrels perched on the top of his sofa. And of course, his favorite cow would drop in to ask for a banana. Morning and evening, a group of Brahmins chanted the holy scriptures. At a fixed time, the sage would make a short walk in the surrounding area, and it was on these occasions that we could speak to him in private. At 11 o'clock, we would all eat in his presence. Curry rice served on banana leaves spread out on the red tiled floor. The right hand alone was used to carry the food up to the mouth. According to the rules of caste, the Brahmins ate apart, separated by a screen. The Maharishi was seated so as to see everyone. He had been born a Brahmin, but because he was a sage, liberated while alive, as they say in India, he was beyond all caste observances. The ashram was about 15 minutes from the little town of Thiruvannamalai, where I had rented a tiny room for 5 rupees a month. At night, I would unroll my sleeping bag on the terrace, since my room was stifling due to the hot sun of the day. Each day, I would leave the town and go to the ashram, sheltering myself from the blazing sun under a black umbrella like a well-to-do Hindu. Each day, I would meditate and listen to the Ann Ella Mailed photo telegraphic answers given by the sage, or else I would simply notice that some of my problems were disappearing even before I could formulate them. It was as if they were resolving themselves. I often consulted two of the disciples who knew English very well when I wanted to understand a classical text, or again to clarify some statements that appeared to be contradictory. We can never know that by which we know, however, that is the only immovable element underlying all of our changing experiences. It is that which allows us to feel the fullness of a mysterious reality within. If we fear that the world of the senses is either going to fascinate us or disappoint us, there is no use in becoming an ascetic who renounces everything through sheer willpower. But armed with patience, we must, on the contrary, continue to live a normal life, and at the same time inquire into the nature of this I that surges up each time we say, I think, I ask, I feel, I am. Meanwhile, I was reading lots of other things, but they did not help me enough. What counted above and beyond everything else were the eyes of the Maharishi when he looked at me, a look so noble and so magnificent that one had to ask oneself, what was he seeing? So, something cracked in my heart, my thoughts stopped, and a grateful certitude, accompanied by a wave of love, flooded my chest. Finally, I was able to love without any restriction, to love without asking for anything in return, to love for the joy of loving. These brief and rare moments gave way to dry and critical thoughts, but they also gave me patience and courage. All I had managed to understand was that for most Westerners, harmony, love for one's neighbor, and wisdom are inaccessible as long as the most important part of us continues to be ignored or else smothered by our secular lives, which are focused solely on obtaining a security that cannot exist on the material level. For the first time, I can accept this without fighting it, because I have started to understand the absurdity of our world and the absurdity of the efforts that up to now I had blindly made to try and reach deep harmony. Concluded.